Welcome to the podcast on Natural Dallas, or The Pond for short.
Here's where we take the measure of the natural world that is all around us,
probing its secrets,
and beholding its mysterious wonders.
The flora, the fauna,
the earth below our feet, and the sky above our heads.
All is for a game as we wade ever more deeply into the waters of discovery.
This podcast is brought to you by the staff of the Dallas Public Library,
where we strive to connect the curious with the passionate
and foster a culture of lifelong learning.
The views shared on this podcast are those of its participants and not those of the library or the city of Dallas.
Let's get started.
Hello. In today's episode, our topic is urban carnivores, specifically two carnivore species that, although secretive, are quite common in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, coyotes and bobcats. We're joined today by Brett Johnson, Senior Environmental Coordinator and Urban Biologist for Dallas Parks and Recreation Department. Brett, would you like to tell us a little bit more about how you got into the world of the urban carnivore?
Yes. Back in 1999 through 2002, I was the bear researcher at a Philmont Scout Ranch, and that was my introduction to carnivores. After that, I came to work for Texas Parks and Wildlife as an urban wildlife biologist in 2004. And one of the things I had noticed real quickly is we got a lot of requests for information on urban coyotes. And so I spent about 6 months doing a literature review of urban coyotes and worked on putting together kind of an urban coyote management plan and outreach program. That carried me through, and I did a lot of recommendations around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I've done recommendations nationwide on urban coyotes. And then starting in 2012, 2013, we had an opportunity with Texas Parks and Wildlife to do research related to urban bobcats. And so we had a couple of grad students that we worked with, and we helped as technical advisors and did a lot of the field research on that. And then November of 2015, I came to work for the city of Dallas.
Okay, thanks. The study on bobcats, is that the one where Derek Broman?
Yes, sir. Yes. Okay. I helped write up the background for that research project. And then it was very handy that he started with Texas Parks and Wildlife about that time, and he had a background specific to bobcats. And he was the agency lead on the bobcat project. And then I was involved kind of in the background and helping do a lot of assisted with the trapping and then the field tracking, going out looking for the radio signals and all when need be.
Okay. Well, we may come back a little bit when we start talking about bobcats in a little
That'll
bit
work.
To information from that study y'all worked on. So most of us have some level of a mental picture of bobcats and coyotes. We kind of get a visual image when people mention those terms. But sometimes folks are a little unclear about their physical attributes as far as how big they actually are. For example, you probably heard people claiming to have seen mountain lions when actually it's probably more likely that they saw bobcats. You want to talk a little bit about distinguishing physical characteristics of both bobcats but also coyotes?
Okay, on the bobcats, yes, over the years I have taken well over 100 what I like to refer to as the mythical mountain lion sightings. In close to 13 years in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, I've never actually confirmed a mountain lion in Dallas or Tarrant County or any of the continuing counties. As far as their actual physical characteristics go, an adult bobcat, a female, is going to typically be anywhere between about 12 and 16 pounds. So just a little bit bigger than your standard house cat. A male is going to typically be anywhere between about 18 and 24 pounds. In our study, we did have one large male that looked very large. He was 29 pounds. The interesting catch with him was he was also a very monocolored or just one-colored bobcat. If you just saw him at night, if you didn't really take note of the tail, he was a fairly tall cat. And I could see where there'd be some room for some misidentification, but not that much. He'd have been a little bit taller than knee-high. But again, realistically, we're generally speaking between about 12 and 24 pounds on those bobcats. On the coyotes, that's another one we get a lot of misinformation out there. Over the years, anytime I took a bob or a coyote call, generally speaking, they would start at about 50 pounds. Here's the reality on the coyotes. Females are going to run about 22 to 29 pounds. Males are going to run anywhere between about 29 pounds and 33 pounds. That's the general extent. A 35-pound coyote in this area is a large coyote. And like I said, people generally right off the bat will claim 50 pounds plus. We may occasionally have a 40 pound coyote walking around this area, but that 40 pound coyote is visually going to look bigger than an 80 pound German Shepherd, but he's not. The other issue we have to deal with coyotes and guessing their sizes is during the summer, they're a lanky species. So when people are thinking they're starving, they're not. That's just their natural appearance. We typically, when we think about our dogs, most of our dogs are actually overfed and generally are more heavier than they should be. You can't make the assumption that, you know, what looks good on a coyote isn't what's supposed to look good on a dog.
Okay. So I thought maybe we would just diverge a little bit between talking about the two groups together to kind of go on individual tracks, maybe talking first a little bit about coyotes. And I know there's a lot of overlap between the two groups as far as their habitat and the types of food they eat. But if you could just talk a little bit about coyotes and like where they live, what they eat, how they range, how they've adapted to urban environments in general.
I like to refer to coyotes as kind of super generalist number one. Number two is raccoons, but we're not really getting into those today. The coyote has adapted over the years to living in urban areas very well. We have coyotes that live practically in downtown Dallas. We see one that lives, I don't want to get into a lot of specifics, but we'll just say near 35. There's a pair that lives in that general area. To give you an idea just how adaptable coyotes can be to living in urban areas, in Chicago, where they've actually done most of the urban coyote research over the years, they've got a mated pair, which is actually how you find most coyotes. They're either running around as individuals or as a mated pair. They have a mated pair that is raised multiple litters of puppies on the top of a three-story parking garage right next to Soldier Field. That is about as urban as you can get. They just dug in under a tree planter on the top of the parking garage, and they have successfully raised puppies there. Now, think about just about anywhere in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We have power line right-of-ways. We have the Trinity River. We have multiple 100-year floodplain areas that run all through Dallas. All of these act as wildlife superhighways. That's one of the reasons why we can, quote, never get rid of all you name species, coyotes being one in particular that tends to get a lot of attention. As far as what they eat, almost anything. They are technically an omnivore, meaning they eat plants and animals. Depending on what time of the year it is, they may be very plant-oriented. When the mesquite trees are dropping their beans, they have a very high sugar content. Coyotes have a sweet tooth. So you'll go through a couple of weeks where almost 90% of their diet is mesquite beans. When the Mexican plum is producing fruit, and the persimmons are producing fruit, they will literally almost try to climb the tree to get to them. What gets attention, though, is the meat side of their diet. Most of the time, it's going to be rodent-driven, assorted house mouse, your black rats. Those are invasive exotic species that they love in urban. It's one of the reasons they do well in urban areas is they like the rodents. We have some rodents that are found only around humans. And when you get a high population of those, you get the coyotes. You also get the bobcats.
So those would be non-native rodents.
Non-native. Like that's going to be
Norway rats.
The Norway rats, your black rats, your house mouse. Those are what they call commensal species that are only found around humans. And so when you get large populations of those, you do tend to pick up those predators that come in there. That's one of the ways they've adapted is going after those three species. They also like rabbits. And a lot of our lawn care methodology makes some neighborhoods very attracted to rabbits. If you have a lot of rabbits, you will get coyotes. That's just kind of a given. But where they tend to get, we sometimes run into conflict, is related to pets. There's a couple of different angles we have to keep in mind when we're talking about pets, especially cats. A lot of people keep cats outdoors for one reason or another. That is not a natural prey item of coyotes. So that's a learned behavior, which usually means somebody has been feeding outdoors for a period of time and usually takes 4 or 5 encounters between a coyote and a cat before a territoriality issue pops up where the coyote comes in, finds the cat eating the cat food, and suddenly they don't understand.
So the coyotes consider that part of their range or for their food source?
Yes. That's one of the things about almost any wildlife. Once they find an easy source of calories, in this case, someone leaving out dog or cat food, that's a lot of easy protein. They will keep coming back to it. So that's one of the first things that usually in hindsight, when I'm working on a coyote issue, that's one of the things that comes out is, oh, we noticed that we were having to feed the cats a lot more. You weren't feeding cats. We have that issue. The other thing is, one of the ecological services of coyotes is they act as a scavenger. Over 80% of all outdoor cats are killed by cars. Most of the time when people see a coyote eating on a cat, it's usually near a road. So if that is the case, unless you actually saw the cat or the cat being taken by the coyote, can you actually make the assumption that the coyote killed the cat? I'm not saying that doesn't happen. It just, most of the time, it's a scavenging issue. But in the end, just need everybody to remember, they are omnivores. They will eat just about anything. Anything's got a calorie and not that hard for them to get, they'll try it.
Okay, what about reproductive behavior of coyotes and how that might be affected by urban areas?
Okay, I'm actually glad you asked that because coyotes are very interesting in their reproductive ability. They typically start reproducing when they're about a year and a half old. You'll find stuff where they can go as young as 6 months, but that doesn't happen that often. Generally speaking, as they mature and when they become sexually mature, they will pair up and become a monogamous pair. They will periodically join up with other mated pairs to create a pack. Around here, these packs very rarely go more than about 6 individuals, and they're very temporary in nature. So they'll come together and then they'll split up. Now, one of the keys here is they will get to know the coyotes that are in there doing the finger quotes in their pack. They will show territoriality to other coyotes. That'll come back into play here in just a minute. They typically start reproducing when they're about a year and a half. On average, they will have about 4 to 6 puppies in a litter, and they've got a gestation period or a pregnancy of about 2 months, about 60 days. So a lot of our urban animals that do really well, a lot of these generalists, you'll see a pattern. They have about a 60-day gestation period, and that's one thing. It helps them crank out babies really fast. One of the neat things about coyotes is they are what we call a density-dependent breeder. And what that means is as more food resources are available to them and the mom is healthier, litter sizes tend to get bigger. So if there's a lot of food available to them, which is often possible in urban areas, what was 4 to 6 may become 8 to 12 puppies. This is also one of the reasons why if there is a control issue, if you start trying to remove a lot of coyotes at one time, you may elicit this density-dependent response, meaning that for every coyote you remove, you may quite possibly get 2 in return. So 2 or 3 years down the road, you actually had more coyotes than you did before. And so that's why, from a management standpoint, it's usually better to see what you can do to avoid creating a problem rather than ultimately trying to immediately jump to a lethal solution.
Are there any really interesting things about coyotes, aside from what we've already talked about, that you think our listeners might find?
One of the coolest things is when you look at their scientific name, Canis latrans, means song dog. And one of the neat things about them is they have 11 different vocalizations, and they're the most vocal canine in the world. That is why there's often so much confusion about how many coyotes are actually out there, because everybody was like, oh, I heard there's got to be at least 5 to 10 of them out there calling. Well, again, it's usually a mated pair. You're probably listening to 1 or 2, and you're just listening to the different vocalizations that they can make. That's one of the coolest things to me. And again, they are so highly adaptable. Areas that you wouldn't expect to find them living in. By the time you notice them, they've probably been living there for years.
Fascinating stuff about coyotes. Let's turn to equally fascinating bobcats now. If you could talk about those same issues as far as how they've adapted to urban environments and food and
One of the things I want to mention about the bobcats and the coyotes and the interaction between the two, they actually do very well together in the area because there's enough what we call resource partitioning and differences in their diet that there's not a whole lot of conflict between the two. Because remember, those coyotes, they're omnivorous. They're eating plants and animals. Your bobcats, on the other hand, they are strictly obligate carnivores. And so they're always going after meat. Their presence and density is going to be purely driven by the prey populations in an area. That's one of the reasons why, as we develop areas, it's not that uncommon to actually see, especially during construction, it's not that uncommon to see an uptick in bobcat sightings in the area. And a lot of times, it's not so much that we're removing their habitat, it's that the rodents get moving. And when the rodents get moving, the bobcats will appear. Now, after an area is developed, a lot of times we'll see a kind of a slump in the bobcat population for briefly until your landscaping starts to mature and all. And one thing we know about new residential areas, they tend to be very attractive to rodents. The house mouse, the black rat, and the Norway rat, they're all commensal. And a lot of these newer developments tend to irrigate a lot. And if you've got a lot of irrigation on an area, that makes it very attractive to rodents. Again, if you have the rodents, you will get the bobcat. And I just want to say, you can't get a much better rodent control than a bobcat. Just as an example, when we were doing the bobcat study over in the Arlington area, we had a small female that was killed by a car, but we did a necropsy on it. And when the grad student looked at the stomach contents of that, there were over 20 black rats in her stomach at that time. You don't get a much better rodent control than that. They're not terribly inclined to go after pets. Is it possible? It's quite possible, but we've seen very little evidence that they actually consume pets. If they go after one, it's more of a, either they're playing with it or it's a matter of competition. They're not real likely to go after pet food. Again, if they're hanging around an area, it means you've got those three rodents, the house mouse, the black rat, or Norway rat, or you've got an abundance of rabbits in the area. They do go after squirrels some, but really it's those first four that I mentioned. The coyotes tend to be a little more flexible about being seen around humans. In fact, some of them get a little too comfortable sometimes. Bobcats aren't, generally speaking, are not nearly as comfortable around humans. So they'll be around, but you just don't typically see them as often.
Is part of that having to do with their activity cycle? I don't know if you've nocturnal versus crepuscular factors in.
Yeah, coyotes are, I'm going to back up to the coyotes for just a second. Normally they're going to be crepuscular, but one thing we've seen is coyotes often are very dictated by the human schedule. You think about a neighborhood, typically from about 8 o'clock in the morning until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, typically there's not a whole lot of people in that neighborhood. It's not that uncommon for the coyotes to become more active during that time period and then disappear for a little while and then come back out after dark. Your bobcats are going to be blunt, they're going to be active when they're active. A lot of that's going to be when is the prey active. When it's really hot right now, a lot of the rodents flat out aren't going to be moving. If they're not moving, the bobcats aren't going to be moving.
What about reproductive behavior of bobcats? I don't think we touched on that yet.
A lot of our urban animals are going to have about a 60-day pregnancy. Neat little fun deal with them. Also, again, a lot of our urban wildlife that do really well. They're, a lot of times, the peak of their breeding cycle is right around Valentine's Day. Now, this makes sense if you think about it, because right around Valentine's Day, we're right kind of starting to taper off of winter, and if they've got a 60-day gestation period, that means they're going to be having their babies right around mid-April going into mid-May, somewhere right in that time period, which is right when we tend to get some of our best plant or vegetation growth. So we've got a lot of rodents are also kind of peaking about that time. There tends to be a lot of food right around that mid-April to mid-May time period. Generally speaking, they're going to have about 2 kittens per litter. They don't breed nearly as fast as the coyotes do. So if they disappear from an area, you tend to see more of kind of an ebb and flow with the bobcat population. Because if you just have a couple of them disappear, you won't have any sightings for a while. Give it a couple of years and they tend to cycle back up.
Let's also hit you with the same question for that we did for the coyotes as far as an interesting fact for, that our listeners might possibly take away.
Okay, one of the neat things is related to their home ranges. When they start to disperse, the females will generally take over about a third to a half of their mom's home range and they think nothing of it. But part of it's genetic, part of it's territorial. The male kittens, when they disperse, they may go 50 plus miles away. That helps disperse the genetics, and it also helps get them away from the bigger males, because once they disperse, that's their general goal in life until they reach sexual maturity, is to not get beat up by the big males. They're going to keep moving until they find a open territory for them to get established in.
So, interesting.
Yeah, kind of a neat deal.
We did touch on some of these issues already as far as pets and everything, but what, as an urban biologist, what concerns have you heard from residents about the presence of these carnivores here in our cities, and what's the best way we can coexist with these animals, okay, both the bobcats and the coyotes?
All right, for both of them, it generally comes down to 3 main areas of concern. The first one being disease. There's concern, everybody usually jumps to rabies. Both can technically carry rabies. Neither one tend to be a big rabies carrier in this area. We go entire years here in Texas where we may only have 1, 2, or 0 coyotes in the entire state test positive for rabies. So again, I'm not encouraging you to go play with them, but they are generally not a big rabies carrier. Same with a bobcat. But ultimately, when it comes to rabies, though, it's generally a concern with pets. Easiest thing to do, make sure you keep your pets current on their rabies vaccinations. There are other potential diseases that both coyotes and bobcats can carry, but the easiest thing to do, again, is keep them separate. And generally speaking, that comes to good fence maintenance and watching where you feed your pets. I encourage feed them indoors. If you do feed them outdoors, just feed an amount that they're going to eat in one sitting and then take in their food bowls. So there's not that attractive factor. When you are out, be it a dog or a cat, I encourage keeping your dog or cat on a leash. And by that, I mean within 6 feet of you, under your control. Retractable leashes where the dog can go run into the bushes with the coyotes. That leads to the issue of, is it the coyote trying to take the pet, or is it self-defense on the coyote's part? So we've got the issue of diseases and taking pets. Then general concern then usually goes to safety related to kids. Keep in mind, in the history of the U.S., there has only been two coyote-related fatalities ever. In the main case in California, it was a matter of the neighbors were hand-feeding the coyotes in the weeks leading up to the incident, and it was with a three-year-old girl that was unattended in her front yard at the time. Lots of lessons to be learned, very easy to avoid. Most of the time, when in over 85% of the cases where someone has been injured by a coyote, hand feeding has been involved. Right off the bat, that seems like a really easy thing to avoid. You know, if you're not out there literally trying to hand something to the coyote, your chances of having an injury related to a coyote are pretty much slim to none. In Texas, we've had either 6 or 7, depending on how you look at it, people injured by coyotes, and all of them have been extremely minor in nature. And of those 6 or 7, at least 4 of them have involved someone trying to hand a treat to the coyote. Again, not a good idea. Bobcats are even less than that. You can find some stuff on YouTube. Most of the injuries related to bobcats have actually been out of Arizona, and that actually has been a rabies issue. We have not seen that much at all in Texas. In fact, most injuries related to bobcats in Texas were turkey hunters. So they're wearing camouflage, sitting in the bushes and clucking like a turkey. So, surprise.
Right. You invited a predator.
Yeah. Again, very easy to avoid. If I message to everybody, make sure your pets are vaccinated and don't feed the wildlife.
Seems like common sense ideas.
Very common sense, very simple. And keep your dog on a leash. We see that a lot. I'm the biologist for the Parks Department, and I often have game cameras out. And I have game cameras out in the woods and just surveying for different wildlife, seeing what the park users are doing. And I have over 200 pictures of dogs in the woods, and twice I've got them on a leash, twice out of over 200 photos. And the next photo will be of the owner walking along with the leash in their hand.
And then, of course, the dog is being exposed to snake bites and, you know, other things too. So it's not just a great practice.
Exactly. So again, it's the law. They're supposed to be on a leash. And people tend to forget that's not just for our safety. It's for the safety of the dogs, and it's also for the safety of the wildlife that's out there.
Makes perfect sense. Well, Brett, it's been great having you talk about bobcats and coyotes. I know I've been fascinated, so thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
You've been listening to The Pond Podcast, brought to you by the staff of the Dallas Public Library, where we inspire curiosity, connect people, and advance lives. See you next time, and until then, keep your eyes open for the natural world all around us.